It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
The sound of an assassination. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. Shock in Japan and around the world after former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was assassinated in broad daylight while giving a political speech in Osaka. NBC's Janice Mackey-Fryer begins our coverage.
The suspected gunman was tackled by Abe's Secret Service detail. Police named him as 41-year-old Tetsuya Yamagami and seized what they described as a homemade shotgun.
Police say the suspect told them he aimed to kill the former leader. Current Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said the shooting is not a forgivable act. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo remembers Abe fondly.
He was quiet but as tough as nails. He was a decent man who understood the world and all of its evil and all of its realities, and he worked relentlessly to deliver good outcomes. And he loved this place. He loved America too.
Columnist and international affairs expert Gordon Chang reflects on Abe's huge legacy.
Abe was a figure of towering vision. It was his idea that the free societies of East Asia and North America work together. At the time, which was the first few years of this century, countries rejected his idea.
Chang says now that idea has been embraced in the Quadrilateral Security Group. That's a strategic security dialogue between Australia, India, Japan, and the U.S., seen as a response to increasing Chinese influence. Russian President Vladimir Putin says military operations in Ukraine have hardly even started. He's daring the West to try to stop him. He made the comments Thursday in a meeting with parliamentary leaders, telling them, "We haven't even yet started anything in earnest." He says his troops in Ukraine have earned a rest for their hard work so far. But retired General Jack Keane tells Fox News that's not why the Russian offensive has eased up.
But the fact is, despite the military momentum that Putin and his thugs have been able to achieve, they are back on their heels because it's cost them so much.
Keane says a window of opportunity is opening up for Ukrainian forces to push back and retake some lost territory, but only if the U.S. and its allies make good on promises of increased aid. A key foreign policy moment coming up for the Biden administration next week as the president heads to the Middle East. After stopping in Israel, he heads for talks with leaders in Saudi Arabia, looking for a diplomatic balance between the U.S. need for Saudi oil and anger over Saudi human rights abuses, not only there, but by Saudis in the U.S., who some say have literally gotten away with murder. Critics of the U.S. cozying up to these Saudis include this Oregon father, whose daughter was killed when she was hit by a car driven by a Saudi national who was charged for that crime, but then fled the country before he faced American justice.
Not very political. I don't know all the ups and downs, but I do know this, that any agreement between the U.S. and the Saudi government that does not address these Saudi students that have not stood trial, and these guys have been accused of things like rape, possession of child pornography, and of killing my daughter Fallon. If this is not addressed, then it's not a good deal for the U.S.
President Biden once described the Saudi crown prince as a pariah. What next in the UK now that Boris Johnson is a lame duck prime minister? This conservative veteran says the scramble's on.
But it seems like half the parliamentary party is trying to see if they have a viable candidacy.
Johnson says he'll stay in office until his fellow conservatives sort things out. Conservatives will then hold elimination votes until two candidates remain. Then it goes to the public. Back to America. The economy added a better-than-expected 372,000 jobs last month. Labor Department figures out this morning also show the unemployment rate remaining at a near half-century low of 3.6%, fourth month in a row for that number.
Clearly, in 2022, the second half of the year is going to see slower job creation than in the first half of the year. But job openings remain robust.
CBS's Jill Schlesinger. Democrats in Washington are reportedly proposing to raise taxes for some high-wage earners to help pay for Medicare. New York Times says the Senate proposal would raise over $200 billion over the next 10 years by imposing an additional tax on certain forms of income. It turns out the National Education Association won't be replacing mothers with birthing parents in its platforms, at least not this year. The plan's been tabled after catching a lot of flack. NEA leadership had sought to change mother to birthing parent, father to non-birthing parent, and maternity leave to parental leave, all in the name of LGBTQ inclusion. Tina Deskovich with Moms for Liberty.
To draw that back, because they know American parents are not going to stand for that. Mothers everywhere defend their title. We wear that badge proudly. We have earned it with all of the work we have put into our children. We love our children, and we are not going to let their radical ideologies steal that from us.
Delegates did pass several other left-of-center proposals. Governor Gavin Newsom is receiving criticism for going to Montana to visit family. The state is on the list of banned places because it has what California calls discriminatory LGBTQ policies. Montana Congressman Matt Rosendale tells Fox News,
"We run things a lot differently up here than they do in California, clearly. And that is mainly the reason that we've seen such an exodus from California to states like Montana, where people live freely."
Officials from Newsom's office say the ban only applies to travel using state funds and that the trip's not being funded by the state. Officials did not say, though, whether his security detail is covered by the state during that trip. And a wildfire in California's Yosemite National Park is threatening some of the biggest trees on Earth. The Washburn Fire, burning near the lower end of Yosemite's Mariposa Grove, is home to more than 500 giant sequoia trees. Those trees can grow up to 250 feet tall or more. Some are believed to be more than 2,000 years old. Still to come on the Noon Report, a court ruling in the Topps shooter trial, resolution in a PA cop controversy, and, well, just what is a Bearcat anyway?
Good afternoon. As we head into the weekend, we do so with prospects for some very nice weather, ultimately. But there could be a shower or two before we get there. I'll be back with forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin Williams. Now, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. The suspect in May's deadly mass shooting at a Buffalo supermarket will not be getting a lengthy delay in his trial. Appearing before an Erie County judge Thursday, the suspect's lawyers failed to convince her to go along with a year's delay as the federal case against him proceeds. He's facing dozens of charges for allegedly killing 10 African Americans in what authorities say was a racially motivated attack. And in response to the Topps shooting, the Erie County, New York Sheriff's Office has proposed the creation of a behavioral threat assessment team that would investigate threats that are reported to police or found online. Yesterday, the county legislature approved funding for the team, which will involve federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. The program expected to be launched by the end of the year, and the Erie County Sheriff's Office said it will contact schools, medical facilities, and churches to have them join in the program's efforts. Embattled former cop Timothy Lohman has withdrawn his application as the sole police officer for Tioga, Pennsylvania. Lohman is the former Cleveland cop who shot and killed Tamir Rice in 2014. Borough Council President Steve Hazlett tells WETM,
"As of right now, we do have his notice to withdraw his application."
This comes just 2 days after Lohman was sworn in, prompting protests from dozens of residents. Mayor David Wilcox says he had zero knowledge of Lohman's background, but Hazlett refutes that.
"The mayor had access to this information since day one, and he basically refused to look at any of it until the day of the interview. And we had his application and his whole packet right there to be looked at, and the mayor never opened any of it up."
Mayor Wilcox posted on Facebook Thursday saying council members should be ashamed of themselves after voting to hire Lohman, and that to imply he knew about the hiring, quote, "makes me sick to my stomach." The mayor of Watkins Glen, New York, is stepping down, Luke Lezak, citing distractions created by what he calls harassment and false accusations from some in the community. In 2021, Danielle Matthews and her husband, ex-Watkins Glen Police Sergeant in Charge Brandon Matthews, filed a notice of claim against Lezak for alleged sexual harassment and abuse of power. Deputy Mayor Louis Parazzini will serve as acting mayor. That takes effect immediately. Back to PA. Republican state senators have advanced a proposal to add language to the state constitution stating explicitly that the document does not guarantee any rights relating to abortion or public funding of abortions. Bill sponsor GOP Senator Judy Ward of Blair County said it would simply give the legislature power to determine abortion law. The Pennsylvania House has passed its $45 billion budget proposal by a vote of 180 to 20. WGAL's Tom Lehman says just under $43 billion would come from state coffers.
Budget also funds about $850 million in new spending on public and special education, including $225 million in more funding for the state's 100 poorest school districts.
PA House Speaker Brian Cutler says the deal both responsibly saves and invests money for the future. The state Senate will take up the measure next. Also in PA, a dispute about state funding from the University of Pittsburgh over its use of fetal tissue from elective abortions in research ended quietly yesterday when lawmakers approved the annual subsidy. The state Senate passed it with funding for the other three state-related universities, Penn State, Lincoln, and Temple. Pitt is in line to receive $155 million in the current year. House Republicans had sought a provision that would require a university financial officer to submit a sworn statement attesting that their school does not use such tissue in order to get state funding. Back in New York, a Southern Tier community continues to help Ukraine. The First Ukrainian Pentecostal Church in Binghamton hosting another fundraiser to support war relief efforts in the Eastern European country, along with local families battling cancer. The barbecue fundraiser will be Saturday from 11 a.m. until the food runs out and will feature plenty of music, traditional Ukrainian dishes, and activities for kids. And now back south, a new law recently signed by Governor Tom Wolf changes the definition of a veteran in Pennsylvania. Senate Bill 849 changes the wordings related to employment preference for veterans who have been discharged because of a medical disability. The full bill can be read online and will take effect in 60 days. Commuters and tourists to Pittsburgh are about to face an uphill detour. Family Life's Brian Query explains.
The city of Pittsburgh is known for many things, including its sports teams, its bridges, and the two inclines that take riders up to the scenic overlooks of Mount Washington. Well, riders won't be able to use one of those inclines starting August 1st, as the Monongahela incline will be closing for about 4 months for repairs and upgrades. Pittsburgh Regional Transit says the incline will be out of service to allow updates to the mechanical, control, and electrical systems. There will also be upgrades to the upper and lower stations. Shuttle buses between the bottom station and the top of Mount Washington will be provided during the closure, which is expected to last through mid-November. Brian Query, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brian. And America's fifth oldest zoo, the Ross Park Zoo in Binghamton, has some new additions to their collection of animals. Two new binturongs, or more commonly known as bear cats, have been moved into the exhibit previously inhabited by coyotes. The zoo's Miranda Fink tells 12 News.
These guys actually have prehensile tails, which are pretty cool. And they use those tails like a monkey to give them another limb. So when they're climbing, they'll wrap it around the branches to keep them more steady when they're climbing.
Binturongs are warm weather creatures. Technically, they're not bears or cats. They love the sun and spending their time high up in trees or on their playground. A bear cat, by the way, is the mascot for athletics at the State University of New York at Binghamton. And speaking of athletics, that means it's time to check sports.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Mark, the Yankees held off Boston in Beantown last night to hand the Bo Sox their third straight defeat. This one 6-5. Josh Donaldson had the big blow for New York, hitting a granny. Aaron Hicks also went deep. Rafael Devers hit two home runs and drove in all five of the Red Sox runs. Houston beat Kansas City 5-2. Baltimore topped the Angels 5-1. The Tigers edged the White Sox 2-1. And Seattle won over Toronto 8-3. Over in the National League, J.D. Davis had a 5 RBI night, collecting 3 hits, including his third home run on the season. The Mets clocked the Marlins 10-0. Derek Hall homered and drove in a pair to help the Phillies to their 5-3 win over the Nats. The Pirates and Reds split a twin bill. The Bucks taking the first game 4-2. Ronzi Contreras pitching one run ball over 6 innings, and Diego Castillo did some yard work of his own in the win. The Reds took the nightcap 5-1. Cards beat the Braves in 11-3-2. Colorado edged Arizona 4-3. Padres also won by a run in 10, 2-1 over San Francisco, and the Dodgers beat the Cubs 5-3. Big news out of Wimbledon, second-seeded Rafael Nadal has withdrawn from the tournament. That puts Nick Kyrgios into his first ever Grand Slam final. The U.S. Women's National Soccer Team will be back in the World Cup after shutting out Haiti last night 5-0. And 17 distinguished Americans were awarded with the Medal of Honor yesterday at the White House. The first recipient, Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles, whom President Biden called a trailblazer and role model. That is a look at sports.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report, we'll recap the Abe assassination in Japan, some new economic numbers out this morning, and a new map that illustrates a divided America.
The search for the Fountain of Youth continues, and this time, medical researchers hope to find it in a lab. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. According to the writer of Proverbs, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Well, so is cultural change, which often comes along with efforts to change language or the definition of words. For example, Harvard medical molecular biologist David Sinclair is combining innovation in the lab with innovation in language. In a recent CNN article, one of Sinclair's financial backers described the goal of his research as changing the definition of the word aging. He wants to make aging a disease. And Sinclair claims to have successfully interrupted the aging process in mice by turning adult cells back into stem cells. Some animals are designed with a similar capability, albeit in a more limited way. Think, for example, of an octopus regrowing a leg that's been cut off. Using the same idea, what Sinclair calls an ancient regeneration system, he hopes to regenerate cells that deteriorate with age. Already, he's been able to repair ocular cells in older mice, allowing them to recover their youthful eyesight. And the ultimate aim, of course, is to develop anti-aging therapies for humans. Though some concern has been directed toward the safety of Sinclair's process, what's gone largely unquestioned in media coverage is the chief aim of Sinclair's work itself. In other words, as so much medical ethic goes these days, the idea here is that if we can do it, we should do it. Medical ethics from a Christian worldview perspective, however, is not that simple. Now, whenever Christians can affirm aspects of work like David Sinclair's, which attempts to overcome consequences of the fall, we should. The Bible does teach that death is an enemy, and that humans were not made to die. And humans should recognize that the ingenuity and passion for exploration that often inspires medical progress is God-given. We're not to pretend that we are God, of course, but he did gift us with the ability to work alongside him in order to accomplish his purposes for the world that he made. The mandate to build and to create, tending the garden of his world, is to be done within the moral limits that reflect his character and how he created the world. Keeping these sorts of things straight is essential to ethically pursuing and employing technologies like those that promise to reverse aging. In his book, Bioethics, A Primer for Christians, bioethicist and theologian Gilbert Mylander counsels Christians to view the freedom to pursue medical progress not as freedom from restraints, such as death. Instead, we should consider ourselves free to work alongside God, imitating him on the path he set for human flourishing. And this will mean, very often, in fact, not doing, as God once described the men who built the Tower of Babel, whatever comes into our minds to do. Mylander counsels Christians to fight the temptation to use medicine not merely as a way to care for our bodies, but from the desire to control them. If the chief end of medical research and practice is to live on our own terms, we'll inevitably make moral compromises along the way. The goal of medical research and practice should be to help people flourish in the bodies, in the times, in the places, and within the limits that God has given us. From this beginning, Mylander suggests that the principle which should govern Christian compassion is not to minimize suffering, but to maximize care. Our purpose is not to avoid suffering or even death at all costs. Rather, we must take into account that in God's mercy, even our suffering can be redeemed for good. We lament the hard realities of this fallen world, and we seek to understand them within a larger context of creation and resurrection. And that's how we can know that death is not the end of life, nor is life only a prerequisite to death. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
For this afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine with a shower in a couple of spots. Most areas stay dry, and many of us could use some moisture, though. High temperatures near just over 80. For tonight, a few scattered showers across parts of Pennsylvania, mainly central and eastern sections. Elsewhere, it clears out and cools off. Low temps, mid-50s to the mid-60s. Now, tomorrow, there'll be some early day cloud cover in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania. Otherwise, both weekend days are sunny and gorgeous. Highs in the 70s tomorrow, 70s and low 80s on Sunday.
Sounds very good, Kevin. Thank you. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you again for joining us. Recapping our top story, former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe assassinated in Japan. The longest-serving prime minister of the country was shot while speaking at a campaign event near Osaka this morning. Police arrested a man who is said to have told them he aimed to kill Abe over a grudge. Columnist Gordon Chang on how Abe was able to get along with many leaders, including Presidents Obama and Trump.
Shinzo Abe had a quality which many people would like to bottle. It was calmness. It was a vision. He had an idea. He was going to implement it regardless of the circumstances.
Chang calls Abe a giant of Japanese politics. The Battle of Texas continues. When a Texas police officer catches an illegal immigrant, they're now allowed to transport that person back to the border. Governor Greg Abbott issuing an executive order that changes the rules for both state troopers and the Texas National Guard. He says Texas is just doing the job that the federal government's failing to do.
An international organization labeled the Biden's border between the United States and Mexico the most deadly border in the entire world. And Texas is stepping up, trying to compel the Biden administration to actually follow the laws passed by the United States Congress.
Abbott says the move is meant to curb cartel smuggling as calls grow for the state to declare the border crisis an invasion.
Courts are going to have to rule that this is true, that states have to be able to stand up and defend themselves against a derelict president and a secretary of Homeland Security. We're being inundated and overrun.
Texas Congressman Brian Babin. Critics say the new Texas policy is just grandstanding. Russia issues Ukraine an ultimatum.
Vladimir Putin is warning Ukraine of dire consequences if it refuses to accept its ceasefire terms. The invasion began February 24th, but the Russian president says his country has yet to begin fighting in earnest. Putin accused the West of pressuring Kyiv to resist in the face of an overwhelming military force.
Matt Piper reporting. Retired General Jack Kane tells Fox News Putin's all bluster and that his offensive is actually not going well at all and is now vulnerable to a Ukrainian counterattack. America's economy added 372,000 jobs last month, higher than expected.
Job creation is starting to taper off. The labor market is clearly in transition from the COVID era. We still have about 500,000 fewer jobs than we did before this crisis.
CBS's Jill Schlesinger. Labor Department figures out this morning show unemployment holding at 3.6% for the fourth month in a row. Huge crowds of Muslims climbing Mount Arafat in Saudi Arabia today for the climax of the annual Hajj. The mountain in the holy city of Mecca is where they believe the Prophet Muhammad delivered his final sermon. And a new map illustrates a very divided America.
It comes from the Public Religion Research Institute, and it gauges support for abortion in all 50 states. But the chart inadvertently paints a picture of what's rapidly becoming the divided states of America. The states where support for abortion is highest are in the Northeast, Upper Midwest, and Far West. States in the Southeast and Lower Midwest are more likely to oppose abortion. Plug in another hot-button social issue, and you'd get about the same map.
Michael Harrington reporting. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Now, let's go on a little staycation with Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
Hi, I'm Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you to Heritage Village of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York.
I'm Sean Lukasik. I'm the board president at the Corning Paint and Post Historical Society, and we're also the arbiters of Heritage Village of the Southern Finger Lakes.
Guided tours take place Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and you need to call ahead to make arrangements.
So however you arrive at Heritage Village, you'll find the oldest building in Corning, New York. The Ben Patterson Inn was built in 1796. It's over 225 years ago. And we have lots of displays, sometimes programs and demonstrations that happen in the inn. You get to see a little bit about what life was like for not only the innkeepers, Ben and Sarah Patterson, but also for the travelers who came up to our region to search for land parcels to purchase in the early 1800s. Also, as part of our village, you'll get to visit a one-room schoolhouse, an original blacksmith shop, a log cabin. These are all structures that have been moved to the village from different parts of the region, but they are all original buildings. And then we've got a couple of buildings that have been more recently built, but built in the style of different periods from the mid-1800s all the way up through the mid-1900s. So it's a great opportunity to kind of check out different stages and how people lived and how people spent their daily lives at different points in our region's history.
Yeah, and starting with early American life, so after the American Revolution was completed, we were a new nation, and that's what people can see in the Patterson Tavern.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the land that the Benjamin Patterson Inn is built on, of course, was first inhabited by the Native Americans, and they were pushed out during the Sullivan Campaign when they came through our region. However, they left a lot of traditions. They left a lot of knowledge with the people who eventually would settle here. And so when you come to visit, you'll see a lot of interesting signs of how people learned from Native Americans when they did ultimately build on the land that was once theirs.
Sean, what were some of the tribes that were here in this area before they were moved out? And do you know where they went?
I don't, and I don't want to answer that question incorrectly. I can find that out for you.
But, yeah, no worries. The Sullivan Campaign, that was part of the Revolutionary War, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. What's unique? Like, what stands out to you? What's one of your favorite parts about the inn or the village?
I would say, you know, when we have events going on or when we have school programs, that's when the village really comes alive. So not only do people get a chance to, of course, see and experience the different displays and things, but that's when the demonstrations are going on. That's when you can see traditional hearth cooking the way it would have been done in the early 1800s. Mm-hmm. That's when you get to see the blacksmith shop in action. We have volunteers who are often spinning wool and showing how that's done, and they're quite experts at it. So that's fun to watch. And in the schoolhouse, we have programs where people can use the old desks and chairs that were there and learn about stoking the fire in the winter and how kids kept warm throughout the school day. There's just so many great things to see and interact with, especially when the events are going on. And those are some of my favorite times.
Do you have some of those events that are coming up or events you want to highlight?
Yeah, the next event that we have coming up is at the end of September. It's our annual Heritage Festival. People can come and see all the different things that Heritage Village has to offer, as well as additional demonstrations, vendors, music, and a whole variety of activities. And that's at the end of September. And, you know, going on all summer long from now through Labor Day, we've got the Agnes Flood exhibition on display inside the Ben Patterson Inn. So anyone who comes to visit between now and Labor Day will get a chance to check out that exhibition as well.
Yeah, let's talk about Agnes.
What happened was Tropical Storm Agnes, as it was called at that time, came up along the East Coast and then kind of parked itself in this region. In Corning and Painted Post, we have the convergence of three different rivers that then turn into the Chemung River, and 7 inches of rain over 3 days turned into the equivalent of about a 40-foot rise in the early hours of June 23rd, 1972. The Chemung River broke through those levees and the wall of water started moving through the valley here. And because it was during the early hours of the morning, the alarms and things didn't happen with enough time to warn everybody adequately. So it was just a really difficult day. One of the things that is kind of interesting and more of a fun memory of the recovery efforts in the days after the flood is that, of course, we didn't have any drinking water because the entire infrastructure was wiped out. And we also didn't have bottled water in 1972. So one of the ways that we got water to the community is thanks to the Genesee Brewing Company in Rochester. They filled their beer bottles with water and shipped them down here. So we had thousands and thousands of cases of drinkable water in Genesee beer bottles. And I know a lot of people who were young at the time laugh when they think back on drinking out of beer bottles when they were just kids. And that was kind of a fun memory for a lot of people at that time. And if you come check out our exhibition, we still have some of those unopened bottles that were sent down here from Genesee Brewings. And that's, of course, just another example, too, of communities helping each other out. We saw neighbors helping neighbors. We saw people who were trying to rebuild their own homes, but also contributing to nonprofit organizations, to trying to preserve and save artwork that was destroyed at the Corning Museum of Glass, and just so many examples of people stepping up to help each other out.
Sometimes it's those worst tragedies that bring out the best in humans.
Yeah. We have an exhibition on display all summer through Labor Day.
So how much does it cost to come visit everything that there is to see here at Heritage Village of the Southern Finger Lakes, and where can we learn more?
General admission for adults is $8, and we have different prices for seniors, for students, and of course, it's always free for members. People can learn about visiting the Heritage Village and about becoming a member on our website at heritagevillagesfl.org. That stands for Heritage Village Southern Finger Lakes.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a destination in Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Tracy. Catch Tracy's staycation features Fridays this time of year on our Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead, the story of Wrong Way Bob.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast on the weather map. We're watching a very weak cool front getting ready to move through the area. It'll bring a shower to a couple spots this afternoon. Most of us are dry. The better chance of showers will be tonight across some parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania, especially south of I-80. For the weekend itself, Saturday and Sunday will turn out delightful across the board. The call for this afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine, with a shower in a couple of spots. Most areas stay dry, and many of us could use some moisture, though. High temperatures near just over 80. For tonight, a few scattered showers across parts of Pennsylvania, mainly central and eastern sections. Elsewhere, it clears out and cools off. Low temps, mid-50s to the mid-60s. Now, tomorrow, there'll be some early day cloud cover in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania. Otherwise, both weekend days are sunny and gorgeous. Highs in the 70s tomorrow, 70s and low 80s on Sunday.
Finally, this is the story of Bob. Bob is British. Bob is 4 years old. Bob is also a homing pigeon. A while back, Bob's job was to fly from the Channel Islands to Newcastle, England, about a 10-hour flight if you happen to be a pigeon. Then Bob disappeared. Weeks went by. No Bob. His owner feared Bob was lost. But then Bob reappeared. But not in England. No, Bob showed up in... yeah, Alabama, about 4,000 miles off course. Bob was also a very dirty bird, the theories, but Bob landed on a U.S.-bound oil tanker and took a free cruise to the U.S. Thankfully, through a microchip and a tracking number on his leg, an animal shelter there able to track down Bob's grateful owner.
And when I got the email on Wednesday, it was a big relief.
The shelter put Bob on a Zoom call just to confirm.
He turned his head like this, and he was moving his head back and forth, and he recognized his voice. And I thought that was the sweetest thing.
And pretty soon, Bob will once again be in the air, this time as a passenger pigeon, flying commercial back to England. The newspapers even offered to pay Bob's fare. When Bob gets back to the UK, he'll have quite a story to tell. If only we could understand pigeon. That's the world we live in for this Friday, the 8th of July, 2022. Thank you very much for listening. Have a blessed weekend. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.